Welcome back to Movie Trailer Reviews Podcast. It's your host, Chris, here with Rowan Brandon. And Rowan and Brandon are here to talk about the film Motherless Brooklyn. I do not have the synopsis up for it because I did not see this film. So I'm going to let them go ahead and talk about this film. I do know it stars Edward Norton. So that's about all I have. I'm not going to lie. I skipped out on this one. So what do you think of this film?
You want to go first, Bree? You want me to go first?
I'll go ahead and go, Ro.
I like the book better.
There's a book?
It's a PI story. Of course there's a book.
She said that like a nigga read. Go ahead.
I really did, didn't I? I liked and disliked this movie. I felt like there were certain aspects of it that did a really good job of kind of reinvigorating the old Philip Marlowe style PI story. I felt it was a good use of the voiceover, but an overuse of it. I thought it, the production, the set design, the soundtrack is one of my best use of music because I love Wynton Marsalis. But I feel like they tried to overstuff the story, and by doing so, they lost some of the thread and the pace was off. Like the pace didn't bother me because I don't mind slow movies, but I think they're going to lose a lot because they dragged it out too long. What you think? What's your quick summary, sir?
First off, I need this white woman on my phone to be quiet because I didn't ask her shit and she just started talking. So Google all up in my business. I don't know why.
Well, maybe Google got opinions about Motherless Brooklyn.
So like, just a quick visual for y'all. So if you're looking at trailers and stuff for Motherless Brooklyn and you're like, so something happens to Bruce Willis and stuttering Stanley has to figure it all out, right? Is that what's going on?
I hate you so much right now just for that. Sure.
That's what the trailer says. Essentially, it's if you watch anything like a Dick Tracy type detective film noir type thing, that's essentially what this is. It takes place in what, the 1960s? I'm taking a guess
50s.
Here.
50s. It's the 50s.
Okay. It takes place in the 1950s. And essentially, Edward Norton is a detective who narrates his whole everything and is trying to solve something. He's trying to solve something that has no idea exactly what he's trying to solve or figure out. And things just keep unraveling. And I mean, from there, that's pretty much it. It's loaded with cast. First off, it's a lot of people in this that I was like, oh, I know that person. Oh, that's cool. Okay, this is starting to get a bit overwhelming. Why are we introducing all of these people that should be like B characters and have little subplots? But oh, they do. Okay, wow, this is a lot. This is a Reader's Digest of film. I said on Facebook that Motherless Brooklyn is film salad. And you were like, no, it's not. And I'm still over here like, putting
film salad. Okay, what did you mean by film salad? Because I did knee jerk and just disagree with you.
It's just a mix of different film plots and stuff that might work if you had longer time to stretch them out. But it goes from one thing to the next thing to the next thing, and it's just a whole lot of film. Like, when I was walking out of the theater, one person said, a black woman sighed and went, whew, that was a novel. And I was like, it was, though. It really was a novel, and it's kind of confusing at times, and it drags at some points, and then other points, I feel like it yada yadas content. And I completely agree with you. Edward Norton, I like him. I think his acting is superb. I think if he had any hand in writing some of this or, you know, directing or whatever, it shows in some parts and other parts. I am baffled and understand why Marvel might not ever bring him back to be Hulk again. He's too much. Like, his narration is too much. And I really, like, one of the things I needed to write down was he coasts on his tick for the first third of this film. Because I don't feel like the first third of this film is that interesting at all. I feel like it picks up in the middle, it creates itself some pace, and then in the end, it doesn't really stick the landing the way I would have wanted. I wanted to know why are we all here? Why are we still sitting here following his character? And when you it's not terrible, but it's also like, I don't know if that was really worth it. I don't know if all that was really worth what we ended up at. I think Alec Baldwin is amazing, by the way.
Agreed. Alec Baldwin, I mean, he channeled every single thing about him that is problematic directly into Moses Randolph in the best possible way they could be done.
My theater found it extremely funny. I don't know if we're all going to hell for laughing at that man's tics, but I think the fact that they made his tics actual, like his, they were his observations and things he wanted to say or was saying in his head, and they came out. I thought those were actually well written, which I've never actually seen done in a film this way, where they kind of use his tics to show him cracking jokes on people when that's not really the character.
Well, it is the character. This is why I said that I felt like at certain points there's too much detachment between who you're watching and what's going on. Because, you know, they didn't do a really good job of making you understand the dynamic between Lionel and Frank, Bruce Willis's character. But then they do. Like you have an understanding of the back and forth between them and why he's so loyal to him, and that, you know, he's a junior partner in Bruce Willis's or Frank Mina's PI firm. So it's an old gumshoe story. So it's also kind of done the way they used to do those old serial versions of the noir stories. So the ending never really lands for me in those. It's always about the journey. The thing that really got me and kind of started to piss me off about this is, like, they did such a good job of setting up the vintage time and giving such a great backdrop and world in which Frank Mina was working and everything that was going on, is when they kind of got down to the nitty gritty, there was a detachment outside of Edward Norton's version of what his Tourette syndrome looked like. They don't also tell you enough that he has Tourette syndrome and obsessive compulsive tendencies. So they show you what he has to do when he has, like, you know, he has to, like, do things at a certain number of times, or close a door a certain number of times, or something has to sound right or feel right, or he has to do it over again. Those things are supposed to have shown up more in his investigation, and they didn't. So you got a really good sense of personality about this person, but then all of those things were really kind of detached from what he was otherwise doing. And it's like they spent a lot of time making sure that you understood Lionel or Edward Norton's character, but they didn't then turn around and really show you what that means to the investigation and how he works. But they also didn't do a really good job of integrating him with the story he was truly investigating. So that comes down to the character that was played by Gugu. And so you get a lot of, like, the background noise, or it's not noise, but you get a lot of the background information about what's going on, but you don't get a lot of what is actually the story in Motherless Brooklyn. And if he had wanted to just do a character study of Lionel and kind of have you spiral inside and outside of his head, that would have worked. But the way that these stories are told, the whole point of Motherless Brooklyn is you're supposed to stay inside Edward Norton's head, but it's supposed to all be specific to the investigation. How do his tics, how does his obsessive compulsiveness help him narrow down to things, but also how does it hurt him? And we're supposed to get all of that as you go through these other characters. So as we meet Laura Rose, who's played by Gugu, as we go in and discover what's going on with Moses Randall, played by Alec Baldwin, as you get Tony, who's Bobby Cannavale, and as you get Paul, who's Willem Dafoe, and as you start to get a better picture of what kind of guy Frank Mina, played by Bruce Willis, really was, you're never supposed to fall outside of Lionel's head. And when you do, you get this kind of detachment from everything that's going on. And I think that means, one, it does a disservice to the source material, but it also fails the adaptation because it starts to feel like work. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's just kind of like, I feel like most of the film, his narration sounds like reading notes. And that's kind of why I get disconnected from really getting into all the other characters around him. He's just, like you said, he's really just doing a character study of all these other characters around him, for, like, straight out of his notebook. And I'm like, but you have actors here. I feel like the only actor who actually got to shine, to show, to really, outside of Alec Baldwin, I feel like the only other actor that really got to show himself was Michael Kenneth Williams as Trumpet Man.
Man, I loved Michael Kenneth Williams in this movie.
Like
he and Alec Baldwin are why I didn't check out.
Yeah, and I mean, and I like Willem Dafoe. And mind you, I saw Lighthouse before I saw this. So I've gotten two dosings of Willem Dafoe this week, and he is a phenomenally ranged actor, and it's kind of a waste to have him not fully, you know, lean into this character. They also wasted Bobby Cannavale. Is it Cannavale? As Tony Vermont.
Yeah, they really wasted him.
I don't know, because he's a great actor too, and he can play a really good villain. And not like his character is kind of just supposed to be someone you despise, and you would recognize that as the audience. I feel like while some of the film is not developed enough, too much of the film at the same time is on the nose. Like the audience gets certain things because it's blatantly displayed out in front of you. It's not really hidden. It's only hidden to the characters on screen, except for Edward Norton, who is breaking the fourth wall, it feels like, constantly when he's reading his notes. And he's sitting in the audience with you, watching himself do things in the film and then talking about it in that way. And it gets to be annoying. The relationship that they forced develop, and I'm sorry, it's forced developed with him and Gugu Mbatha-Raw, I just could not connect with it, dog. I was like, so you're winning her over off of her depression and despair. And I don't know if I like that, the way this film is showing it.
I never really felt like it was so much him winning her over, but that's because that's just trash. Like the way they tried to set up the dynamic, it worked in the sense that I felt like it created interesting moments, but then I felt like it really failed to use the other people who were involved in that part of the narrative. And we can't really go too much details because all of that's spoilers. But I do agree that I felt like a lot of what they were trying to do to kind of keep them comparable on screen and to kind of create some kind of chemistry was entirely too forced. And I think that's where he fell too far into the minutiae of the story that's told in the book. And I really feel like if he really wanted to kind of have this set in against the historical backdrop of what was happening at Brooklyn in the 1950s and have that be the wraparound, that as you unravel all of that, you start to realize that there's something deeply personal and fucked up at the center of it all. He should have done that. I mean, but he tried to go for the typical gumshoe, you know, corruption, you know, begets murder, begets mystery. But he also wanted you to really, really kind of try to follow along with Lionel. And I'm like, you're trying to do too much and you're doing it at a weird pace, because a lot of the parts, like you were saying, I agree with you. I don't really feel like we needed some of it expanded out as far as we need. And there are other parts where there really could have actually been action and movement and tension that he chose not to do it. And I felt like it gave a really uneven pace. It created a disingenuousness and a detachment. And the things that I really liked about this movie are the kinds of things that you really kind of have to like noir for. And the other elements don't hold up against what's good. And like that made the performances when Willem Dafoe was on, it made that really stand out and it made you want to follow that. And then you have the dynamic of what's going on between Willem Dafoe and his arch nemesis in the story. That's its own book. Literally, it's its own story. And then you have what's going on with Randolph and the multiple levels and people in involvement with him. That's several books. You see what I'm saying?
I mean, there's characters they're just characters they don't need. And I feel like they just showed up. Like Leslie Mann's character, it just doesn't add enough to screen for you to have needed to keep her. I know it's trying to paint a picture for Frank and it's trying to do something for Tony. But I feel like that was wasted time. Cherry Jones is another actress that I don't have any issues with, but I feel like her character didn't need to be in this as well. I feel like that was just a lot of screen time dedicated to her and that movement that we just didn't need for Edward Norton's story to continue along with Gugu. Like it's just a lot of stuff here. And I while saying all of this, I'm critically nitpicking it, but my audience enjoyed it because the one thing that he did do to keep the pace for them was the comedy. Just dropping a one, and he really does lean on his OCD and his Tourette's as comedy. I don't know if that's okay. I know that it works as far as being entertaining in this film. So it, you know, the audience kept up with that.
I think
that.
It's not a way people are used to looking at it. I didn't mind it in the sense, because I know lots of people, I've seen different documentaries, and I had know a couple people who have Tourette's, and none of it looks the way that they usually show Tourette's. So I was very happy to see that he gave an atypical performance with somebody who had Tourette syndrome and didn't make them either overburdened and maudlin or felt like they were so bitter and removed. You know what I mean?
No,
so
I didn't
have a problem with it. I hope people don't find it to be anything other than him trying to say that, you know, this can look like anything. It doesn't always have to look like the way they like to show it, people screaming and cussing and all of it being profane kind of thing. So
yeah, no, I like I said, I think the way they did it was smart. I'm just not a part of that group, so I don't know how they're gonna feel when they right. see the film and how they'll perceive it. You know, if you're looking for something, you'll find it. I think what he did here was more of a commendable use of it, and I think it actually propped up the film in areas where it should have been really low, because it just wasn't anything yeah. else going on screen. I know I had wrote down some stuff. I know one of the things that I wish the film had more, because the costume design, like you said, is great. I wasn't as in love with the soundtrack as you, but the background music, especially when it went to the jazz spot, was very intriguing. And like, you know, it's one of the reasons that you kind of want to buy things on vinyl and listen to it that way. You know, I know people are like, MP3 is better, but ultimately for some sounds, just that old vintage taste in the air, that flavor, it goes with that music. So hearing it here in this film was dope. I feel like they did not spend enough time in the jazz club or in jazz spots, period, in this film. I feel like they didn't spend enough time in like on the political side and like what felt like the reconstruction of New York. In this
everything film. In this movie should have stayed rooted around the concept that it all leads back to City Hall. And I really feel like if he had stuck to the narrative, you wouldn't have felt like Leslie Mann was useless, because that was its own storyline. And that was the reason why you could have had the cross between Alec Baldwin's character, Gugu's character, and what was going on with Leslie Mann and his brother. If they had stayed tight mm-hmm. to that, I really feel like this would have been better. And then just kind of given you the development of Lionel through all of that, instead of trying to do the character study and the character development of Lionel and then have it jump in and out of what was happening in Brooklyn. And I felt like it was a disservice to a really good unraveling city. It all goes back to City Hall kind of PI mystery story that I was excited for. And mm-hmm. the parts that I got, I really enjoyed, because a lot of the history was not inaccurate.
I mean, I get it. Like, when you have that much introspect on it all on the property already, like I could see how you could be bothered, but like just as a film too, just it like, I think the thing that disappointed me the most, once I get outside of the, I'm not super into detective stuff, but this kept my attention. I'm not super in to the 50s like that. But, you know, what they've done here with the costume design in the background is pretty great. I think the one thing I was waiting for them to do that I was hoping they wouldn't do, and they do it, is explain the title. And there was enough in this film that they did not need to do it. They didn't need to give an explanation for the title. They could, because I was disappointed, because like, the reveal of the title's meaning, like, I was hoping they wouldn't reveal it, and instead it could just be seen as a metaphor for the way Brooklyn was being reconstructed and redesigned. And instead, I'm sure it's in the source material, it's in the books, and that's why they did it. I was just kind of like, I feel like that is such a basic
explanation. I didn't feel like they needed to do it, and I felt like if they could have done it, it could have been done more smoothly. I felt like that's another place where they overplayed their hand where they didn't need to, so I do agree with you on that. I mean, there was a lot of times where they played past the point, where you got the point, where they set up a great mystery that you could unravel, and then they felt like they needed to tell you what it was that you had just unraveled just in case you missed it. And then other places where they should have been drawing things out, and we could have had a lot more action and movement and a greater use of all of these amazing actors, they didn't do as frequently and as evenly throughout the movie as they could. I liked Motherless Brooklyn. I was disappointed because I hoped it would be better. It kind of reminded me of Ben Affleck when he took, what was that movie, the mob movie he did.
Oh my God, the one where he went to Florida?
Yeah.
With the Haitians? Oh, that movie was a mess. It had good parts and potential, but it was too long. And his writing, I think he worked on that script, didn't he, for that film?
Probably. I mean, it's also a book. And that's the part of the problem is he tried to do too much.
He definitely did. Because that film ran absolutely too long.
Live by Night. I liked a lot about what they did with Live by Night, but I also felt like that's another place where they gave the lead actor way too much permission to run amok with a voiceover narrative. And then, yeah, he was the writer and director on that too. So maybe that's what it is. I never believed that Edward Norton should be allowed to both write and direct himself.
Yeah, he got too into it. So ultimately, what are you rating this? What are we giving this?
For the film overall, by itself, it's a 6.5. But you throw in how much I love this damn music, and that makes it like a 7 for me. So I'm a little conflicted.
Yeah, I'll give it 7 Chipmunks Love Nuts out of 10.
7 times that I should have gotten more scenes in the jazz club with her daddy.
Which, by the way, the way they did his character and acted like you were about to get more of his character, that was disappointing. That was poorly
handled. That's what I mean. Like, if they had really just stuck with having this be us actively with him unraveling this damn mystery, I really feel like this would have been a real resurgence and throwback of the neo-noir gumshoe mystery with a roadmap for how you do this in these times. And it was so close to fall short. I still think people are going to enjoy it. I mean, I did, but it's not the best thing I've seen. It's better than a lot of other things I've seen. And I enjoyed the performances. I just didn't enjoy them all as a whole.
I think of the last 5 films I've seen in the last 5 days, it's number 5. Like, it's definitely number 5.
I mean, come on, I've seen some really amazing things lately, so
yeah, I'm
kind of not fair.
Just, yeah, I know, but it's, yeah, sadly it's number 5. And I'm sure
I firmly believe that as we get further into the fall season, particularly the ones that people want to talk Oscar-y about, Motherless Brooklyn is not going to stay in my top 10, but it's hanging out. It's hanging out at a cool 10 right now.
Ooh, yeah. Well, good luck, Motherless Brooklyn.
It's not going. We already know it's not going to survive, man. Come on.
It's going to be Listless Brooklyn, because. Yeah. Nope. All right, y'all. Is Chris back or is he muted?
I hate you so much.
Yeah, well, you know, nominationless Brooklyn. We can talk about that. We can call it that.
Yeah, I don't think it should be nominated. Okay, I don't think it should be nominated for anything except for music, but again, I'm in love with Wynton Marsalis' trumpet.
All right, folks, that's all you have for Motherless Brooklyn. You find the rest of the reviews on Movie Trailer Reviews on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Spotify. Make sure you subscribe. Also, leave us a 5-star review on the Movie Trailer Review feed in iTunes. We're trying to get to 200 reviews and ratings, so please do that. Stay tuned. We have a lot of other movies that we're reviewing this weekend. And if you become a premium member, you also hear some of the spoiler reviews for those films as well. I just put out the spoiler reviews for The Two Popes, and I just did Pain and Glory. So stay tuned. We have Honey Boy coming, and we're going to also have spoiler reviews for Harriet and Terminator Dark Fate. So just stay tuned over the next couple of weeks and listen to those. If you want to sign up for premium, go to premium.mtrnetwork.net. Until next time, we are out of here. Peace.